When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Welcome to episode 383 of the On the Corner podcast, the official pitchless.com podcast. I am your host, Nick Pollock, joined by the tearless Alex Fast.
Never cried in my entire life. Is that what you mean? Is that what you're talking about?
No, because you don't have any tears on this. This is just like the most boring looking table I've seen site.
All you've been doing since we've gotten on the call together is just dunking on me. Is there anything else that you would like to say?
Yeah, I mean, I did my top 100 today. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. And all I can say is just mine is better. Mm. It came out today.
It is better because it looks more like mine. It looks more like mine than the original one did.
I saw on Reddit, I think somebody was like, what? You had Rasmussen at 29 just the other week. Mm. And I'm at 44. And it's very different.
We are separate but different.
Separate but different is not a thing that people say. Anyway, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Keep in mind, we have PL Pro. We're going to be giving out a discount very shortly to that. So look out for an announcement later this week to get $20 off on yearly PL Pro. So go check that out. You'll get your auction draft calculator, get live draft assistant tool. Projections in season weekly and daily for fantasy and for FanDuel and DraftKings. You also get to join our Discord, all that kind of stuff. Get PL Pro today for your fantasy drafts. The live draft assistant tool I use for every draft. I'm doing Tout Wars on Saturday and I'm using our live draft assistant tool. So I believe in it. I hope you guys enjoy it too. And Fast, you have a big article coming out soon, don't you?
Yeah, hopefully going to come out this week. You got to get some people to take a look at it and make sure it's good to go. But an article about all the stuff that I've been hinting at about the finger pressure stuff, which is very exciting. A lot of crazy advancements going on there. So gonna release an article focused on what the findings were from that first study before we head back up to Driveline, hopefully into a second study relatively soon. So very excited to share that with some people. Been a journey for sure. It's been a journey. Yeah, without a doubt.
I feel bad for the people in the Guillotine League with me right now, as apparently a pick was just made. And you know what? I've got a podcast to do. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do today is we're doing the second half, as promised, of Alex Fast Top 100. I know I just did my 100 today. We'll talk about it tomorrow. It's not going to change. But man, Fast. Oh, boy. We got them some things to talk about. And I want to just understand this really quickly. So at the end of the last podcast, we talked about Chris Bassett, Lance Lynn, Jeffrey Springs at 46, 47 is Pablo Lopez, Brady Singer, 48, 49 is Kyle Wright. Now at 50, is this a new tier for you right at 50?
No idea where the tiers start, where the tiers begin, where the tiers end. You said at the beginning of the podcast, just fully tierless,
I know,
right?
Look, guys, you got to understand, I do this every week where he gives me like 13 things to come up with a theme. And I have yet to be able to do that as a host back onto Alex Fast. And I just wish I had my opportunity to do that. So maybe at some point I can get it out of him. But Lucas Giolito, do you feel like, you know, his recent spring is encouraging you maybe to push him up a little bit more? How do you feel right now drafting Lucas Giolito?
I mean, he couldn't get any worse for him, right? I mean, I think there are definitely some signs, and the spring training stuff is encouraging. I really do like the fact that it's a walk year, and I think one of the things that we really wanted to see from him is what his spring training velocity looks like, and what has his spring training velocity looked like so far, Nick?
It's been about 92, 93, and actually at the end of last year, it was 91. Yeah. So I'm encouraged by this.
Now, I'm with you. I even wrote down, if we can see that he's sitting 93, 94, which he's a tick away from, and which I believe he could theoretically get to over the course of the season, I don't think he's necessarily a bad flyer to take overall. We saw the like a 340 BABIP from him last year, which was a career high with a minimum of 50 innings. We saw a 14% home run to fly ball rate, and both of those things seem very likely just to regress overall. He's capable of having a better year, and right now the price in drafts isn't bad enough that I think like there are guys after him who have just as many warts. You know, granted, they didn't necessarily have the season that he just had, which was really bad, but it's not like that season is a guarantee for him. Again, I can see him kind of regressing in the positive way. And like we mentioned, the velocity signs are indicative of the fact that he should be able to bounce back.
Sure. Now this is very interesting to me here. I'm going through this. Sonny Gray's at 51, Jordan Montgomery 52, Kodai Senga's 53. First of all, I have Grayson Rodriguez like 10 spots higher than you do, which is shocking to me.
Yeah.
He's at 54 for you. Why don't you have him higher?
I think we're going to see a better pitcher than we see a fantasy pitcher this year, because I'm just a little bit concerned about how he's going to be utilized. Like, I really do think that there's a really good chance that he's like 80 pitches and then just gets removed from the game.
So you,
I don't think
you do think it's going to be more of a, like a four innings and change, not a like normal start, but then limited in the season. Like, okay, we're going to now rest you a midseason, or at least skip this start.
Yeah, I think they might. If Grayson Rodriguez was a prospect on the Rays and it was in his first year, I think we would evaluate him a little bit differently, right? Because we know that they'd be like, it would be like what we always say about Jeffrey Springs or Drew Rasmussen, right?
Sure.
Where it's like, we know that they are going to probably not have him go these full innings. And as a result, his value is going to get knocked. Also, you just don't know what you're going to get from rookie pitchers. And I can count far many more rookie pitchers that have not exceeded expectations or even met expectations their rookie year than guys who exceeded or came in at that level. So I think if we see natural struggles from a guy appearing because it's his rookie year, mixed in with the fact that he could just go 4 to 5 innings for a lot of his outings, that requires a lot of like perfection from him, right? That requires a lot of like, oh, just one earned run with 7 Ks. And I just don't know if he's going to be capable of that. Listen, I'm excited. I think he's going to be great. But as a fantasy player, I think if I'm tempering those expectations and baking in the fact that he could struggle naturally in his first year with the reduced innings, I have to bring him down a little bit.
Sure. I'm completely different, where I say you might as well go for this, because right around 50 is where I think actually the top 51 are like the guys I'm like, yes, I feel like all of these are going to help my fantasy teams this year. And after that, I just go, eh, whatever. And you have him around, say, like Andrew Heaney, who could be a cherry bomb. Kodai Senga, we kind of don't know what we're going to get right now. We also just have that injury with a finger. He should be fine, but we don't know. There's a little bit of question mark there. Lance McCullers is at 56, and we have no idea when he's going to pitch. We don't even know that one. Tyler Malley, who hasn't been sitting 94, he's been sitting 93 in spring training. And a lot of these, like, I don't know. And Grayson Rodriguez, to me, if I have him on my team, I mean, I don't think there's going to be a moment where I'm upset that I have Grayson Rodriguez on my team this year. I don't believe that. I mean, I think the chances are in that favor of, yeah, this is a very, we know how good of a pitcher he is. So that's where I stand with it. I also believe that this is, you know, you can't possibly fathom that you have a legit starting pitcher on the Orioles. It's just so hard. You're going to deny it until it actually happens. And even then, you're going to say, give it another week or two. You know, it's going to be 2027. Grayson Rodriguez has 2 Cy Youngs. And you're going to say, I don't know. 53. Yeah,
I do think that, like, I kind of, if I'm being honest, I appreciate the fact that I have an anti-Oriole bias as opposed to pro-Oriole bias. You know what I mean? Like, I'm never going to be like, no one's ever going to accuse me of that. I will say, if you wanted to talk tiers, Kodai, Grayson, Andrew Heaney, and McCullers are maybe in their own kind of individual tier, because
what's it called and why is it called that?
I need a category.
The category this week is going to be alcoholic drinks.
Alcoholic drinks. Okay, so Okay, great. Yeah, it's going to be, I think it's pronounced Lafroig. Right, yeah. It's going to be a very tiny glass of Lafroig because you don't know how much of it you're going to get, but it's going to be delicious when you get it, right? That's kind of what I think, because I don't project Kodai, Grayson, Andrew, or Lance McCullers for more than like 140, 150 innings, right? Sure. Heaney, the reason I put him right below is because he's likely going to have a worse ERA and likely going to have a worse whip, but it would not surprise me if he had more innings and a higher K rate than Grayson Rodriguez, right? Because I don't know how much necessarily he's going to change.
And you said that went until about like Lance McCullers, right?
Yeah, because Lance McCullers is the same way. Like as of right now, even like honestly, the issue that Lance McCullers has right now didn't really change too much of my projection because you know you're not getting more than 130 anyway.
I don't understand though. You got to explain this to me. There's something I'm missing. Mm-hmm. You have that tier of that. You know it's going to be delicious. You know how much you're going to get, and then you have Jesus Luzardo at 63, who you know is about 10 spots lower than Grayson Rodriguez, who's at 54. Why the big gap?
Well, that's a super valid point, actually. I guess you can definitely make a case that Jack Flaherty and Jesus Luzardo should be more at the back end of that. To me, though, for Jesus Luzardo, I project like 110 innings. Like, I just truly do not believe with the track record that we have of him that he is capable for more than that. But I think that's a very valid point that it's like, well, if you're going to have a tier like that, then you might as well include a dude like that there. That was my original thinking, but yeah, that's a totally valid point.
Okay, so it's Luis Garcia at 57, Tyler Mahle at 58, Alex Cobb at 59, Kenta Maeda at 60, Nathan Eovaldi 61, Jack Flaherty 62, and I'm going to say the end of it is Luzardo at 63 to make sure you don't have to do another one of this. They're all kind of in that same vein because Alex Cobb is not necessarily the pinnacle of health. Kenta Maeda coming back from Tommy John, Eovaldi the same way. My comments quickly on this are that Jack Flaherty hasn't looked that impressive in the spring. And I'm a little worried that he's not getting any slider whiffs. His velocity is still down. And we haven't seen Jack Flaherty actually be locked in for a long time. And it just seems, I don't know if I want to do that. Which one of these do you think you're going to be targeting the most in your drafts?
So between Kodai up to Flair, up to Luzardo?
Yeah. Let's go.
If you don't mind, might include Garrett Whitlock too, because theoretically his innings are probably going to be just as capped. Right?
Sure. I mean, John Gray then is at 65, also has some sort of injury question too.
Yeah, that's where I think I see a little bit more of like a, I don't want to say a talent drop off, but yeah, I think there's a little bit more of a gap there. So like the question, like, all right, I would be, I'm usually more averse to some of these like injury guys. Like Heaney kind of scares me a little bit, though I have to recognize that there's upside. So who would I kind of be aiming for since I like to play it a little bit more safe? I would have said Tyler Mahle last week. I don't think I would say Jack Flaherty. Honestly, I want to see you be brave. I think I would take Garrett Whitlock. I know that he's going to start the year in the IL.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. The more that I looked at it, I was actually talking with Alex Chamberlain about this and we started a quiet little Whitlock love affair. He has this backdoor sinker that's really beautiful. I mean, it's not as precise yet. Like there are definitely moments where that can leak over the heart of the plate and get hammered. But he has a changeup that's really, really good. He's got a slider that I really think can take a step forward. Do you know what his slider BABIP was last year?
I think it was like 410.
Yeah, it was insane. His slider BABIP just to right-handed hitters was 500.
Yeah.
Oh,
I knew that. It was a very small sample, of course. It wasn't too often put into play. You also had some crazy things like 19% swing strike rate on a sinker to lefties, which is what?
Yeah.
But I do think it is a small sample situation, kind of Aaron Nola-esque in the way that Whitlock would locate sinkers glove side nearly exclusively. And that could work. Absolutely. My hesitations are, of course, the delay to start the year. We don't really know how much it's going to be affecting him. And, there's oftentimes I see things like this where like, whoa, you had a 22.5% swing strike rate on your slider last year. Oh, you're young and you threw like 50 innings or something. Like you didn't throw the sample that I would really want to get to. Right. And there's that. So I have Whitlock lower than you do because I feel like there is, I would rather have redemptors on my team and know that for an answer right away. Mm-hmm. Like I don't need to do that with Garrett Whitlock in my view. By the way, Henri Detmers very quickly, velocity's up. He's up about a tick or two in the spring are the reports I'm seeing. has that slider whiff rate going up. I was a little more hesitant, maybe not believing that the curveball and the fastball were as good as it wanted them to be, but I don't know. Are you, I mean, you have him at 67, Reed Detmers, as we start a new team, and we'll get to that in a second, but how do you feel about Detmers? It feels like you're low on him and you're not going to have him on your teams.
Yeah, and it isn't, well, what the velocity right now is what? What is he sitting at the moment? Like, how much of a jump did he take?
The reports that I saw were 94 to 96.
94 to 96. Okay, so that's pretty substantial. I think when it comes to Detmers...
I want
to,
by the way, everybody, monitor that one. It could just be something that falls down the next time. Like, we got to get something more secure than that.
Yeah, I think the stuff overall I'm not too convinced about. Like, by Stuff Plus metrics and by PLV metrics,
the four seam
is not great. The slider is not that great. The curveball is well below average. The changeup is well below average.
Well, I do want to mention the slider second half way better than the first half.
Sure,
That's the big deal about the slider.
But then again, nothing with the four-seam or the curveball or the change.
Yeah, the four-seam, the curveball, right. That's what I'm expressing, is that that's my concern with him, yeah.
Yeah, I'm obviously, as you've mentioned, like the improvements in the second half, which were substantial, right? He goes from a 4.11 pitcher over the first 70 innings in terms of ERA to a 3.36 ERA over his final 59 innings. Like you mentioned, it's all because of the slider, right? 1.53 WOBA in July, gets up to a 3.07 in August. Still a good amount of chases. I still think he's not too much of an injury risk, which is a positive thing. I like that he's able to elevate consistently with the four seamer, but I think that we're relying
kicking there, and then all of a sudden,
yeah, that's not bad. I just don't know, and maybe the four seamer helps. Maybe the velocity helps, and that he becomes like a Shohei Ohtani, where he's like, hey, this four seamer isn't that good, but I can pump it in at 96 miles an hour, and as a result, the subpar.
I get a sense also that you mix in an actual good slider for half of the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, that you had for half of the year for consistently, it makes that fastball better. It does just from a results standpoint. I think the actual shape and everything is fine with the curveball. It's just a lot of how he used it was just kind of too much last year. I don't know. I keep going back on it. I mean, he's also like 23. And Angels, I get it. Angels.
Well, apparently it's a new pitching coach too, which is interesting and exciting.
We don't know.
You just don't know there. We don't know how to factor that in.
But I understand what your concerns completely. I do want to ask, this John Gray tier, where would you say this ends? John Gray, Jose Berríos, Reed Detmers, Jameson Taillon, Patrick Sandoval, Marcus Stroman, Sean Manaea, Tony Gonsolin. Stop me when the tier ends, please. Trevor Rogers? Yeah. I think Trevor Rogers would be it, but maybe Michael Kopech, Ross Stripling, Miles Michaelis, Merrill Kelly. Now you get to Toby territory.
Yeah, I would say it probably ends maybe around Kopech.
Okay, so what is it called and why is it called that?
Oh my God, I have no idea.
Fast.
I told you I have no tears. I don't know.
I just gave John Gray to Michael Kopech. Deal with it, Fast.
All right, great. It's an old fashioned, because you're making me want to drink more than anything right now. That's why it's called the old fashioned.
Beautiful.
You're making me want to drink. I would actually say
the Tobys should be old fashioned because they're Tobys.
yeah, that's a good point. I wanted to try and take a look at where the PLV projections have. Oh my God, who were we just talking about?
Tony Gonsolin? Who do you want here? Reed Detmers?
No. Yeah, Reed Detmers. Where were the Tony?
Probably not favorable.
Okay.
I mean, keep in mind, PLV projections are, it's ATC, but then merged with our PLV stuff. And if they don't have a favorable PLV, it's just going to make those ATC ones worse, right?
Yeah.
And I would not expect that. I mean, it does emphasize second half a little bit more. Like a little more than the first half.
So it's not terrible. It's a 3.94 ERA with a 1.23 whip and a 24% K rate. So okay. I think where our differentiation is there is you're probably taking the under, right? On all those. You're probably taking the under on ERA and maybe whip.
No. I'm not doing any over under. No, do not get me wrong here. You're playing a best ball league.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not playing a best ball league.
Yeah.
Okay. I see a guy who could develop very quickly and I can make a quick decision on them. I do like to believe that Reed Detmers is going to be better than that. But I also like the fact that instead of Jose Berríos, who's one ahead at 66, we're never going to get an answer on Jose Berríos. Mm-hmm. The idea that he's going to do something demonstrably different out of nowhere in April, it says, oh, you know what? This is the new Jose Berríos. And all the articles come out on May 15th. Sure. The new thing that Jose Berríos did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to happen. So I'm not going to be able to make a decision on that. That is where I would say, like, all right, projection, guide me. Steer me to the promised land through the muddled waters of despair. Sure. And Reed Detmers, well, at least we'll have some insight on that. So I'm okay. going to have them higher.
All right. I digressed us.
Yeah, old fashioned. So of this tier, who do you think is the most interesting one that you want to talk about? Because I don't have any indications of like change or going up or down. I mean, to me here, we talked about Reed Detmers, who I thought was interesting. Patrick Sandoval is someone that some people absolutely adore, the Irish Panda, as we call him here at PitcherList. I'm worried about the whip for Patrick Sandoval. Do you see anything underlying here that could push him farther than 69 than where you have him now?
Man, maybe we're just seeing a pattern with these Angels pitchers, but between Otani, Sandoval, and Detmers, yeah, we're talking, man.
They don't have them.
Yeah, we're just talking about really bad fastballs, right? And maybe just like we would give the Guardians the benefit of the doubt with kind of poor fastballs but elite breaking pitches, but they have two options. Maybe right. we give the Angels more of the benefit of the doubt. And you could probably say that with Sandoval, right? Because he's got the slider and he's got the changeup. So maybe that is going to allow him to kind of get by on being get by without a good fastball. He's also like, there were certain things that just like clearly point towards regression, right? Like you don't have a 1.3 whip and a high 2 ERA. Like those things, yeah, like just
yeah,
they don't pair up. And if there's one thing that's going to change, I don't actually think it's going to be the whip, right? I do think
it's usually the ERA. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's going to be, I mean, they're both not sticky year over year, but he's also like a guy who's like, his home run to fly ball rate was like 6%. Like, so there's just like plenty of stuff indicating that it's going to come back down to earth. I mean, I guess, you know, the BABIP stuff, it was a little bit elevated, which makes sense why we saw the whip be what it was at like 1.34. I don't want to say that like I'm out. Past Alex would have been like, the four seam is so bad. There's just no way he's going to compete. But now I can understand a world in which he would,
be. What happens when you have a kid? You all of a sudden become bit more optimistic.
It changes a lot of things, but that I don't know. maybe it is. Maybe
we're gonna discuss all the things that it changes after this break.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today. Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes. But the problem is, managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight today and in the future. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Start taking control of your weight management and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
So what are some of those changes, Fast? Tell us all about them.
About fatherhood?
Yeah.
God, some of the beneficial changes of fatherhood. You just worry so much, but you
as
also
if you
like
needed more of that in your life.
But you do. I had such a long, awful day at work today, and so much changes when you come home and there's a baby who's like, blah, 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 just staring at you, and it's very
I'm sorry.
Cute.
What are they like?
Yeah, you're gonna play that back. Make that your new subscription tone on Twitch.
I might actually do that. I'm not even kidding.
This tier is really filled with a lot of interesting dudes, because there are guys like Marcus Stroman where you're like, you know what, fine, you're probably gonna get the same thing, you're probably gonna take
he's
a little
going
bit of a step
very
forward.
Late Marcus Stroman, I just got him in the Guillotine League, because in the Guillotine League it's like, hey, do you have a good start for the first couple of weeks? Awesome, go with that. And he gets the as a member of the Cubs, he gets the Brewers first. Great to see. Jameson Taillon is two ticks higher than Stroman on here. I dig that. I like what Taillon is. It does look like he has something different going on with the Cubs right now. Awesome things there. And it's just very safe. It just feels fine. It started against the Brewers and go with that. You also have Sean Manaea, though, at 71. And maybe that 94 mile per hour velocity is legit. And that gets you hyped up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, like, I know that Michael Ojeda was, you know, publishing some pieces on him. I think the uptick in velocity is obviously exciting. The injuries are always going to be a concern from him. He's still got some really good pitches by PLV and by Stuff Plus. Obviously, a pretty big difference from the 391 ERA, 366 FIP he put up in 170 innings over 2021, and the near 5 ERA that he put up in about 160 frames in San Diego. We saw the sinker move arm side a little bit more. I personally wonder if that impacted the changeup at all. The sinker wasn't necessarily the problem. It maintained its whiffs. It lowered the wOBA to around 300. The changeup was just like, it was just not great. Neither were the breaking pitches. The changeup, he couldn't get any whiffs out of the zone at all, which has usually not been the case for him. The BABIP jumped up. The breaker like just lost its ability to get whiffs out of the zone too. It went from, you know, being able to get ground balls at a relatively good clip to just being a fly ball machine, and you know, a lot of those fly balls just kind of left the yard. So that's kind of all to say that, like, he's had moments of kind of glory, right? And right, I think with this increase in velocity, say it again.
Yeah, Sean Manaea, you've had some moments. Yeah, that no hitter, it was
yeah
cool.
That no hitter, yeah, with that second half that was, I think, really good along with that no hitter. But I don't know. I think if you were at those kind of flyers, right, because we're in the 70s, aren't we? We're at the mid 70s or low 70s, excuse me. So I think when I hear the increased velocity and I see that there is substantial, or I don't want to say substantial, and I see that there is upside, and the things that I think made him poor are things that he could theoretically change, then yeah, I'm going to get a little bit interested in that.
So I want to be clear here. This is a 12 teamer, correct? This top 100?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And we're going to move on to the not old fashioned tier. That is Ross Stripling, Miles Michaelis, Merrill Kelly, and Tyler Anderson. I'm not going to include Hunter Brown in there. I don't feel like we can.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not even going to make you do a tier name here, because I gave it for you. All right.
What was it?
It's old, not old fashioned, old fashioned.
Oh, the not. Yeah. And you know, it's funny, because I was literally thinking this one is actually more of an old fashioned, because you're right. It's an old standby, right?
Right. The thing is, I preach this endlessly. I do not draft Tobys. I just did mine today. I put Merrill Kelly at the bottom. I don't even think I had Miles Michaelis inside my top 100, because there are so many interesting guys to chase. I mean, Fast, be honest with me. Are you just going to settle for Miles Michaelis instead of getting Matthew Boyd in your 12 teamers when it's like the 20th round?
I genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, really believe it depends on roster construction. Like,
I know, but what kind of roster are you going to have that you want Miles Michaelis?
One that takes a lot of risk early on. Like,
you're
I do
never
think
do that.
My, What do you mean?
Oh, me personally? Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. No. Yeah. Without a doubt. That's very true. I would never do that because I'm too tempered. But if you do, Miles Michaelis will provide you value and will be an anchor for your rotation.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. An anchor for your rotation?
I think there's a possible. I think it's realistic to think he gets you 195 innings of a mid-3 ERA with a competitive WHIP. In a roto league, that is incredibly valuable. This is look at it too, man. He had one blip. He had one blip year so far. And I think what we saw last year was the blip year might have been more of the exception to the rule. Right? This is a top 50 pitcher by the player rater standards last year. There were not substantive changes for him. He didn't really change up too much. The four-seamer had a 12% swinging strike rate last year for Miles Michaelis with a 275 WOBA. Like, he put up legitimate numbers over very, very large sample sizes. There are things that he could do to theoretically make tweaks. I don't know. I just don't know if he's all of a sudden going to be like a 4 ERA pitcher again.
Well, okay. I guess my point is really for a 12-teamer, right? I hamper on this a lot, saying, look, the waiver wire pool is so much better than you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And settling for Miles Michaelis when he has a bad first matchup that you're not going to start him in anyway is not what you want to do in your draft. You want to get Matthew Boyd and see if that is legit, because that actually could be something that really pushes the needle for your team. And Miles Michaelis, to me, about 3.9 FIP last year, you know, it's sub 20% K rate. It's a Toby, the Tobiest degree. And I look, Hunter Brown is underneath us at 79. Mm-hmm. And Hunter Brown is someone that has the fifth job right away for the Astros, could hold on to it honestly for the entire year, because who knows what the state of that rotation is going to be when Lance McCullers comes back. Right, sure, you want to say, oh, he's only unlimited 140, 150 innings. Hunter Brown, by every understanding we have here, is not someone who you put him in your lineup and he just has a trash season for you at this moment. I'm not saying that necessarily he's guaranteed to have a 3.5 ERA or something like that, but the weight of his impact, I would argue, is larger than Miles Michaelis and worthy at this point in your draft to chase that higher ceiling than settling for Miles Michaelis or Merrill Kelly. That's how I see it. I understand this is not the same thought process of everyone. You're saying it's roster construction as well. Mm-hmm. And if you're taking a lot of risk early, well, I think all of us are going to say, don't take a lot of risk early. It can't be at a point in your draft where it's like, oh no, I need to take Miles Michaelis. Like that. Yes, there is risk that in your draft, you can take some little bits here and there. But if you're saving grace in a 12-teamer, it's Miles Michaelis. Not good.
I know. I hear you. I mean, I think the counter to that, if that's like saying if you're saving grace as a top 50 pitcher, which is what he was, right? You know what I mean? Like, I think we're denigrating the work that he did last year. That was a fantasy viable pitcher.
All right, I got to push back.
I hear your point.
I got to push back on the whole top 50 pitcher thing by player rater, all that stuff. Essentially, if you have like 195 innings without the worst ERA ever or the worst WHIP ever, you're going to be rated well there. But the idea here is that when you get like 130 innings from someone else, you're getting 130 innings and then you get something else off of the wire. And those two combined are going to is essentially the same thing, if not better, because at least you're taking a chance for the accumulated stats to be far better than what Miles Michaelis was, right? You understand that? So yeah, it's not, you know, it's not a best ball league. It's not a, you know, and your 12 teamers, I don't know. This is my whole thing. About
no, I know. I hear what you're saying.
Rambly.
For Brown, too, I mean, obviously there's a lot of upside for Brown. I'm excited about Brown. Now that, you know, at this point when these rankings were made, he had the fifth job, but I was still like, there were still kind of rumblings about like, what's his name? There was another reliever who's in long relief for them that they were like maybe considering being their number five
right now.
No. This was like a week and a half ago. It was.
Oh, you mean like Josh James?
No, God, remember Josh James?
We were so excited about Josh James.
For Brown, though, I don't know. Like, I personally projected the innings around like 115. And like you said, we don't know.
he could come in and never lose the job because of injuries that happen left or right, or he's just performing so well that they're like, we're a six man now and we want to keep McCullers' innings down or whatever. I think a lot of people are still denying the fact that he had command issues pretty bad in the minor leagues. He had an 11% walk rate in AAA over, if sure. I recall correctly, a pretty substantive sample. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with that next year. I don't know if all of a sudden he's going to fix his command issues, or if maybe he'll get down to like a 9% or an 8% or make huge strides there. But there are some of those warts there. And then, yeah. So when it comes to that versus Kelly, that versus Michaelis, I get
same,
it.
Same, are you? Same thing. Doesn't matter. Kelly, Michaelis, whatever.
They really are. I kept trying to like separate them, and I was like, why? What's the point? Yeah. Like, what's the point?
I think what you ultimately did, correct me if I'm wrong, you said it's the Cardinals versus the Diamondbacks. And you said, that's probably what I would have done.
Yeah, it might have been it. I definitely have Michaelis projected for a few more wins with maybe a better ERA. Kelly, there were some numbers like where with the bounciness of the ball kind of scared me a little bit, where it was like, I think Chase really helped suppress a lot of the contact that he gave up.
For the defense for the Diamondbacks is better.
Which is crazy to say, right?
Yeah.
Right, because we don't know what it's going to be year over year. First of all, they actually, it's not a bold take. I don't think there's going to be any way whatsoever that a team that got rid of Dalton Varsho, who was very good defensively for them, is going to be better defensively than the team with Nolan Arenado. But then again, I don't know about any of their other prospects' defensive ability, so maybe I'm totally wrong. But it's such an unsticky stat.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. To your point about Hunter Brown, I understand exactly where you're coming from about like, hey, the history of walk rates. I also remember pushing back on him saying sub 10% swing strike rate on his four seamer doesn't quite elevate like we want him to. And I put him at 51 because I kind of like him more than the other ones. But the other ones, I look at him, so I don't really know. I don't love anyone else after, so might as well chase Hunter Brown, but. But yeah, we'll see there. Right, we're going to move on here. You got Eric Lauer at 80, Kyle Brash at 81, Tywin Walker at 82, Edward Cabrera at 83, Ronzi Contreras at 84, Jose Urquidy at 85. I'm trying to figure out where a tier is here, and it doesn't exist, does it?
No, doesn't. Maybe if I was thinking of what a tier name would be, I'd call it like a pickleback, because sometimes you just need to like hold your nose and take it, even though I'm a big fan of, oddly enough, of pickle juice, which is kind of crazy to say. But there are a few people around here that like, I honestly wanted to have Ronzi Contreras a little bit lower. I like was trying to acknowledge some of my personal biases and was making sure that I was trying to evenly weight the upside and the downside to him. So I ended up raising him a little bit more. There are just so many things when it comes to Contreras that have me like a little bit concerned. His numbers as a starter were not bad, right? 87 and a third innings, 381 ERA. 4.43 FIP and a 20% K rate and a 10% walk rate and a 1.31 WHIP is not great. The four seam really scares me. I mean, it just gets absolutely destroyed at times. We're not talking about a dude like Detmers or Sandoval, where it's like, yeah, his four seam's not that great, but whatever. This gave up a near 400 wOBA. With a 4.16 X wOBA and a 43% hard contact rate, and he also was like, you know what? I'm going glove side to righties, and I don't get it. Because when he does, which is like also like, hey, where's your barrel going to be? I'm going to go right there. And when he does,
You're universally against fastballs away to right-handers.
When they return a 4.62 wOBA and a 50% hard contact rate, I am. I think there is a solution for there's a combination that works for any person, right? You see guys like, you know, Gausman used to, you know, bring his sinker low and put it over the heart of the plate, and you can't say, hey, stop doing that, because it was fantastic for him when it worked. So if I looked at what Ronzi Contreras was doing and it returned a sub 200 wOBA, I'd be like, huh, he really throws that four seamer glove side a lot, and it works for him, and maybe that's why his slider works, but it doesn't at all. And to be honest, here's the thing, I bet if I went to somebody who worked at the Pittsburgh Pirates organization and I was like, why does he throw that four seamer glove side so much, they'd be like, so here's the thing, he doesn't know where he's throwing it, he doesn't know where it's going, and it just ends up glove side a lot, right? That's kind of what I think is happening.
You know, I say, hey, can you tell this person to put it there, goes, yeah, but they never do that.
Yeah. People, like,
all right, that's fair. That's very fair. Yeah.
So I don't want to like dunk on him too much, but like I kept him in the top 100 because it's tough to deny how nasty that slider is.
I mean,
he's super young. You did? You kept him out of the top 100?
Because I don't want to draft him. I don't want to draft Ronzi Contreras. And I found enough guys to chase. David Peterson could get a start against the Marlins to start the year. Mm-hmm. That's a really good slider. That could work, right? There are a lot of players that could find their way onto this list. And Ronzi Contreras, if I have him on my roster, I don't feel good starting him. And I don't know what I'm going to have to see. I have to see him go 97 and sit there on his four-seamer. We haven't seen that since he was in relief. So, yeah, I'm not in at all here.
I'm going to... There's one other person here that I wanted to provide some thoughts on. And I'm going to provide what is...
No!
Well, arguably some of the best analytics that I can after this break.
No!
Eating is an emotional experience, which is why managing your weight needs to be a psychological one. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Start taking control of your weight management and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
So fast. All right. Mm-hmm. You wanted to provide more analysis on one of the longest lead-ins to the ad break as I've had this entire time on this podcast. Yeah. Who is it?
It's Noah Syndergaard. Like I said, I try to pride myself with the amount of anxiety I have when it comes to preparing. Yeah, as a man of faith, I sit here today saying, there is no great analysis that I'm about to give you for Noah Syndergaard.
Let's move on to the next guy then.
Other than the fact that the Los Angeles Dodgers are a far smarter organization than I am. And any
than
of us
you
are.
Are?
Yeah, they possess people who are
Alex
far smarter.
The organization.
Yeah, exactly. My LLC. If they are interested in signing that man, even with the not great stuff we have seen in spring, I am convinced that it is for a reason, right? Now, his velo's not back, and I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe they turn him into a pitcher that's much more serviceable for pitching as opposed to for fantasy purposes, but I wanted him here because I am petrified that they are going to do to him what they kind of did to Heaney, which is like, you've got enough in your arsenal that we're going to optimize it better than anyone has ever optimized it. And that's why I couldn't not put him in the top 100.
Fast, you have him at 86. You just gave a whole thing like he's at 55.
He was higher before. He was.
I have him at 81 and I'm like out.
See, here's the thing. I don't know if I could be out on any of these guys that are in the top 100. Like, there's a part of me that's single one of them.
That's the thing, is that we see the path to all these things working out. And it made it, if you saw my stream today, it was like 4 hours. And I spent 3 hours of it with my head in my hands because I was like, how am I possibly going to do this? And yeah, because I could see a case for all of these guys, right? Syndergaard's velocity isn't quite there yet. I really need to see slider whiffs before I'm sold, but he gets Rocky Road first. Rocky Road's pretty dang good.
Yeah.
Now, there is something to be said about Rocky Road happening the first week of the season, so they aren't necessarily tuned to cores yet.
Well, that's a good
which
point.
Which means that they might be a little bit better in April than in September. That's something someone can look up. That would be really cool to see. Is Colorado traditionally worse on the road through the season? That would make all the sense in the world to me.
That actually is very interesting.
Another stat right here, guys.
Yeah.
I see like Jose Urquidy, which makes sense because if you didn't know that he was 91-93 in that spring start and getting rocked, then I would normally have them like at 60 or something. Is that part of the reason why you do this with Jose or Kitty, or is that just completely regardless of that?
No, that was regardless of that. I mean, Urquidy, sorry, I just got very distracted because Jeff Passan just had a very funny tweet about how for the first time ever in history, and for the only time likely ever in history, there was just a perfect game that ended with a walk-off hit in the eighth inning as Puerto Rico blanks Israel 10-0 on the mercy rule. And they complete the mercy rule, but ends in a perfect game over four pitchers, which is very funny. Bouncing back to Urquidy, I don't know if I think that the season that he had is kind of indicative of the actual pitcher that he is. The K's dropped a lot. He stopped going to the slider as much in two strike counts, which was kind of interesting. Very prevalent in right-handed hitters. He doesn't really go to the pitch a lot for lefties. Lefties saw a heavier dose of curveballs than ever. In two strike counts, fewer changeups, fewer four seamers overall. And this is conjecture, but you've heard me talk about this a lot in the cast, which is like, it seems as if when there is a cutter that is introduced to the arsenal, that something happens with the four seamer.
Yeah, this is your theory that you had last year.
Yeah, and it's from David Cohen. I mean, David Cohen just kept talking to me about that, saying like, yeah, that happens. Like that is a thing that happens. And he's won a lot more baseball games than me. So I'm going to believe it.
Just like the Dodgers. Overall,
huh?
Just like the Dodgers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm really just slapping myself down. He was just less effective overall in two strike counts across the four seamer, across the slider, across the curveball. I don't know. I think some of the steps that he made with the four seamer can theoretically jump back a little bit. He has a path to kind of get back to what he was. But if he does, like, so what? The ceiling is that higher than like a 22% K rate with like a high 3 ERA and an okay whip? I just don't know if there's like enough that's like, if there's enough like additional ceiling where I'm like, yeah, that's a guy I'm circling on draft day.
Yeah, so fun stuff here, by the way. Ryan Bloomfield just put out another one of his Bloom boards, and it's about PLV. And fast, can you guess? This is the biggest first half and second half PLV gainer. This is from Ryan Broomfield. Can you guess who that would be? A hint, I'm happy I'm asking you.
Oh, that's funny. So my first thought would have been Hunter Green in biggest second half
you
gainers.
You would think that, honestly, but I guess we just liked it all the way through. This is 70-plus pitch starts only. Yeah. No, it's not Hunter Green. I mean, other ones on here, Blake Snell, Spencer Strider. Actually, Patrick Sandoval and Reed Detmers are 5 and 6 on this list. But someone had a 35-point difference.
I would say probably Aaron Civale.
No, I'm going to say it's Spencer Watkins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's your boy going from a 4.69 PLV, which is definitely below average, to a 5.04, which is above average. And someone that we did talk about today was the biggest loser in PLV, going from a 5.12 to a 4.82, negative 30 difference from the first half to the second half. And this is not a fun list. You have Alec Manoa, Frankie Montas, Madison Bumgarner, Brad Keller, Jose Urquidy, Chris Archer, Braxton Garrett, Ryan Feltner, JT Brubaker.
Oh,
yeah, not great. I mean, again, PLV works, guys. Can you guess who it is? Someone who you're maybe a little encouraged about.
And that we actually talked about or was on the list?
We actually talked about.
Manaea, then.
Yeah, it's Manaea. Yep. It is. Yeah, but that's not why we're excited, because it's 94.
Yeah, the velo.
Great stuff, Ryan Bloomfield. Give him a follow at RyanBHQ. It's really awesome to see PLV on his Bloom boards, which are famous at this point. Really cool to see it. We're going to move on here as you continue with it, because we don't have too much time left. It might go a little bit long. I was just about to talk about my own top 100, but not going to do that. You had someone at 81 here, and I don't know if you know him too well. His name is Kyle Bradish. How do you feel about Kyle Bradish? Are you actually going to be drafting him?
That's so funny. You mean the guy we're only 5 spots away on now?
Is that right?
Yep, you're 86.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I'm 81, so we're pretty
similar.
Yeah,
I'm not drafting Kyle Bradish. Like, if they're in the 80s or the 90s, like, I'm not going to be drafting them in all likelihood, because it's just, I very much expect other guys that I'm far higher on than ADP. I'm just going to get those guys. I recognize that Kyle, like, you know me with the list. It's like, okay, he has, obviously he has upside. Slider and curveball, both really good. But it's just about consistency with it. And I don't want to pull him from the depths of 130 to bring him back onto the list if that were to happen, right?
Yeah.
That's all.
I don't think he, it's funny. We're kind of like establishing for a theme for the entire podcast, which is guys who have really good breaking pitches and do not have any four seamers, but increased four seam velocity, which is really interesting. And just kind of an ideal pitching backwards candidate, right? Like, this is a guy who can throw sliders in and out of the zone, right? He can throw sliders for strikes when he needs to, which I kind of dig. So if he can get to a spot where he's doing that with a little bit more consistency, I don't necessarily mind that. I like that he's, you know, sitting 95 in spring. There were peaks and valleys, right? I mean, we saw upside last year. We saw a lot of downside, but we saw upside. We saw that game against the Astros, which is almost obligatory to bring up for him.
Yeah,
but we also saw, you know, four and a third with 6 earned runs against the Rays, and the slider and the curveball, like you said, like, so you've got two plus pitches, right? PLV has the slider at 74th percentile, 17% swing strike rate, 243 x woba, 75th percentile, 278 woba overall, which, you know, again, if we're looking at the x woba, theoretically says that that could come down. I think maybe he could theoretically make some strides in terms of whiffs with the curveball, even though it's not really a great whiff pitch, just 30% O swing, but he induces a lot of weak contact with it. So I think if, again, we're in the mid 80s, we're looking at a guy who has increased velocity on his worst pitch and already has two pitches that he can go to, that's an interesting flyer for me to take.
I would say he really has one at the moment. The curveball is 37th percentile with strike rate on it. Which is just about 57%, a little bit over that. The PLV on it is average at the moment. He actually has a negative Q minus B percentage, which you don't want to have. That's quality minus bad pitch. So he's more often bad than he is quality with it. Not by much, but it's still negative. So I really see a guy who explodes with a slider when he has those great outings. And sometimes and when the curve isn't detrimental, right? When it is actually more of the good than the bad. And that fastball, you know what I hate about that fastball. I think it has too much cut action. It makes it far too hittable. And it's why I had an 8% swing strike rate last year, 33rd percentile, right? And Kyle Bradish, to me, needs to get more out of the curveball. We're talking about that velocity, but it's not about that. With all the Guardians guys, all the guys we talk about that don't have good fastball, it's about having two really good secondaries. Bradish only has one, in my view, right now. So until he gets that curveball up to 25% usage and excelling, he's just a slider guy. And slider guys can have that magical evening. We've seen that before. We really have. But you need to have more than that if you want any consistency through a season. But maybe he could, and that's why he's on my list, because at least he has the door and opportunity to do that. And especially if the velocity is real that he added. I don't know if it's real. It came down. And the start after, just so you know. But
yeah,
I hope it's real. That'd be cool. That'd be great. You guys know me. I just want every pitcher to be dope. All right, we're going to move on here. We've got, I guess, like, what, 20 guys left? Something like that? Something along those lines.
Yeah, about, yeah. We did a little Rhodes, Contreras, and Noah Syndergaard, so maybe 15.
We did a little bit of a Rhodes trip. I thought that's what you were going to say, road trip. Okay. Steven Matz, Zach Eflin, Carlos Carrasco, Matthew Boyd, Alex Wood, Spencer Turnbull. I'm going to say this is another tier. What is it called and why is it called that?
Yeah, this tier would probably go from Steven Matz up to Ken Waldichuk.
Okay, so then we're going to add Aaron Civale at 93 and Ken Waldichuk at 94. What is it called and why is it called that?
I would call it a... What's like a really, sweet drink, that also kind of packs a little bit of a punch.
The
we'll call it a painkiller.
Frat party. I was gonna say a frat party jungle juice.
Okay, yeah, sure, something like that. I think there's a lot. Yeah, painkiller's like a it's a Caribbean drink with rum and pineapple and
it's better than jungle juice.
Yeah, I think it's Jamaican. Anyway.
a lot of these guys are just not sure. You might need to kill the pain because you're not sure how many innings that you're going to get from them, but they could be oh so sweet.
Yeah.
We obviously don't need to waste any time talking about Matthew Boyd. Spencer Turnbull, I think a lot of people who don't do this every day are...
Hold on. Stop for a second. Stop. No time is wasted ever talking about Matthew Boyd.
Good point. Very good point. We know how we feel. I love him. Turnbull, I think people are going to be like, oh, yeah, Spencer Turnbull. Like, I think it's like, obviously it was a 50 innings pitch sample, but very frequently we are like, well, the sample was 50 innings, so that's a good amount, right? There are plenty of metrics that stabilize over the course of 50 innings, and Spencer Turnbull was very good over those 50 innings. I don't think that's the person the person I'm most excited about, of course, Matthew Boyd, always and forever. But
always and forever.
The person, exactly. Gotta get my Boyd tattoo. The person who I actually might be most excited about, who's not Matthew Boyd, is Ken Waldichuk. Ken Waldichuk's kind of exciting.
I know, but fast. He's not going to get the job.
Why do you think that? Who's going to beat him out for it?
JP Sears.
I would be a betting man to say that that's not going to happen.
Have you been following both of their springs?
I've
been invested in it, and Waldichuk is walking the farm while Sears is doing well. I would bet Sears over Waldichuk.
That is so ironic considering the past podcast we've had where I've talked about JP Sears and I said he should be hired. You were like, JP Sears?
I don't like him. I don't want you to have him on your fantasy team necessarily, but like, and also it's maybe a new slider, but I don't think it's going to be Waldichuk. I mean, I very much could be wrong, and I understand all the hype about Waldichuk. Good fastball up in the zone with intent. He's walked a lot of guys, and he's struggled. While JP Sears is like, hey, I'm a starter. Mm-hmm. And then you have Kyle Muller, who isn't doing quite enough. You know, he needed to be exceptional versus Waldichuk and Sears, and that's not the case for Kyle Muller. So I think it's going to be Sears. He also has experience from last year. It's not like he's just some random guy.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe that's the case. Obviously, I can't say.
No, I hope you're right.
If he does, I'll put it this way too. Someone wise once said that you're not drafting a best ball. So maybe someone to keep. Maybe someone to keep in mind if he does indeed start the year in the minors and then get called up. He can elevate his four seamer relatively well. Like you said, there were some command issues. I personally think that the slider, I never thought I'd say this. The eye test on the slider makes me think that the metrics about it are not correct. Like the PLV and the stuff plus, it makes me think like, I don't think it's valuing it properly. When that thing is on, that thing is beautiful. It would not surprise me to see him take a step forward.
How far you've come.
I know. It's very funny, right? It's like the, what's it called? The Dunning-Kruger, where it's like you like go up and then you come back down to essentially where you were in the first place. He uses his changeup a little bit oddly. He likes to kind of like elevate it. And even though he does that, that's another good example, right? I see an elevated changeup and I'm like, I don't know about that. But he had a lot of success doing it.
You have like Lucas Giolito having success doing that. If he can get called strikes doing that.
Yeah.
And if he does that consistently, then I think actually like the Driveline Boys were into that. I'll never call them the Driveline Boys again. You deserve better than that. But
the Driveline Men.
Yeah. correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember when the Giolito was doing it initially and they were like, yeah, this is actually something you can get a ton of called strikes with. It can work if it's your intent. Yeah. I mean, look, you've played the show. You know that works.
Mm-hmm. The show is a whole separate beast entirely.
No, if it works in the show, it works in the
real life. Hey, Blake Snell, I noticed that I did this in the show and you were awesome.
Oh,
but you don't
gosh. It's just funny to think about doing that. But yeah, so hopefully Waldichuk does pan out for you there. And what you're talking about with Spencer Turnbull, on The Athletic, they were raving about how good Spencer Turnbull is right now. 94 on his fastball. He averaged a 93.5 before Tommy John.
I'm in.
Slider is very good right now. And the last time I saw it, do you remember? I doubt you do. I would be so impressed by you, Fast. If you remember, my biggest talking point about Spencer Turnbull and what I wanted him to change about his approach.
More sliders?
I mean, always. But that's a safe bet with everybody.
I thought it was something with like the sinkers and the sliders. But I don't know.
Close.
Remember.
It was that he was using too many sinkers instead of four seamers. His four seamers were way better.
Okay.
And last one I saw, I think it was like 58% four seamer and like 11% sinker.
Mm.
And I'm like, that's how you do it.
I'm in.
That's the good stuff. And I think that's a very, very interesting one. It's kind of stinks. I wish they like changed the Tigers stadium next year as opposed to this year. It's still a pitcher's park, but even more so. You know, Bowie deserves that after the bouncy ball too. Like, here's a gift back for you, Matthew Boyd, because I put him through so much. But yeah, Spencer Turnbull's someone that I'm very much looking at, being like, okay, especially like 15 teamers. Turnbull is also 2 years from free agency, so 2025. That traditionally speaks to like after Tommy John, you go for about 140, 150 innings. If he's doing well at the All-Star break, and the Tigers are in this full-on rebuild mode, think about this. Year and a half of Spencer Turnbull, you think the Tigers are going to be going for it heavy next year this time? They might be a trade target, too.
Maybe. I don't know. Honestly, in that division, they might be fine.
Yeah, that's totally right. That's such a good point. Oh, my gosh. What is baseball? All right. We're going to go to the end of this list now. The last six. And these are fun boys. And I'm like, why are these boys all the way down here? Because they're fun. Mm. Now, I don't have the first one on my list. And I don't have the penultimate one on my list. And I'll explain. I have to go to this meeting in a second. All right, we got to wrap this up. Shintaro Fujinami, Brandon Font, Justin Steele, Hayden Wesneski, Kyle Gibson, and Yusei Kikuchi. Who is the one you want to talk about here fast?
I'll say real quick, I'm a little surprised you don't have Fuji. We'll talk about him a little bit more in depth.
Too much of a cherry
podcast
bomb.
Tomorrow. Huh? Too much of a cherry. Yeah, he is for sure. But boy, oh boy, those whiffs are exciting. Even more whiffs today.
I don't trust it in the slightest. But yeah, keep going.
Yeah. But I'm just worried about innings. I'll end on number 100.
I have him at 100, so there you go. We're cool there.
He was actually going to be my number 100, to be honest. And then I pivoted him out. And I brought in Yusei Kikuchi.
He's had double-digit whiffs in every game.
In every game. I want to say this about Yusei Kikuchi. I get it. I get all the jokes. I'm not doing this again. Every time you talk about Yusei Kikuchi, you see all the memes and the gifs of I thought I was out and they pull me back in. I totally get it. We have to acknowledge at some point that pitchers can be different people entirely year over year, especially when they are not good the year before.
Yeah.
He seems to have made substantive changes. I'm not going to say, hey, he went to Driveline. He did, I think, but he's gone to Driveline before, I believe. So it's not necessarily that. I just think that at pitcher 100, you cannot deny the amount of whiffs that you have seen in spring training, even if it was against poorer opponents. And the reason I'm buying more into it is because, like I said, virtually all of the pitches have different shapes. He's almost a different pitcher.
So
I think there's enough to build off of that. He
now, command is still
really
kind of bad,
flyer.
But that's another story. And last but not least, why do you hate Hayden Wesneski? He's an SP number 5 for Chicago right now with a phenomenal breaking ball.
And that's it.
He actually has a decent sinker and cutter as well.
Yeah, there's promise. The slider is absolutely nasty.
Oh my gosh, it's good.
But the four seamer again is not great, and I don't buy that 5% walk rate. That's a 31 inning sample. I think that's
going
to skyrocket.
It's not going to be like a 9% walk rate like we see from other guys. All right, fair enough. Well, there it is. That is Alex Fast's top 100 starting pitchers. You can check it out on the website. I have mine. I know it's a little confusing. We have Alex Fast, then you have mine right next to each other. You don't know who to trust. It's up to you. It's good to have different perspectives, everything like that, to understand why you're going through. As Fast, of course, provided blurbs every single one. It's just 11,000 words, unlike the 46,000 he said.
I have him. I'm looking at him. I'm looking at him right here.
At him, but you didn't. Oh my God, it's not the same, Fast. But anyway, that is going to do
I got
for
bad
this.
Words in here, like pee-pee and poo-poo. I can't share this in the public.
You just really, we're about to end this podcast, and you just had to get that in. All right. That's going to do for this episode of the On the Corner podcast. My name is Nick Pollock.
And I'm Alex Fast. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.